Welcome back, everyone. This is Sue Michalowski, and I'm pleased to have special guest Beth Manning with me today. Welcome, Beth.
Thanks. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and it's great because you're in Chicago. We're on the same time zone. It's always good to be on the same time zone. All right, so Beth, we want to get to know you better. We're going to dive right in here, and I'm going to ask you where you live. I know you're in Chicago, but what part?
I live in Lincoln Park, right, really close to the zoo. I'm Belden, just east of Clark, so it's a kind of an urban paradise. It's really great.
Beautiful. How long have you lived there?
We have lived here, I think it's almost 7 years. And then before that, we lived in Lakeview, so only a mile north. So I've been on the north side basically since the mid-90s.
Wow, shortly after college.
Yep.
And who lives with you?
I live with my husband, Dave Chang. He went to med school at the UC. And we have a 17-year-old daughter. She's going to be a senior next year. And then we have a cat, two cats, and a dog.
Wow.
Lots of fur in the house.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, your 17-year-old daughter, is there any chance she might be a UFC prospect?
Good question. I think my husband would be really happy with that, but I don't know that it's the right match for her. She's definitely more artsy and wants to go to school in the city, so it has that going for it, but she's shown no interest in it.
Okay. My both of my kids early on looked at me and said, "Don't even go there. We're choosing different paths." So I feel your pain. Now, what is your occupation?
I'm a fifth grade science teacher, and I'm the chair of the middle school science department.
And are you in Chicago Public Schools?
Oh, yeah. I'm at a private school, the Latin School of Chicago, right across from the History Museum.
Yeah. Wonderful school. I don't know a lot about it, but I've had a lot of interaction with kids from the Latin School who donated to Girl Forward, which was a nonprofit that I used to work with a lot. So,
cool.
Love the Latin School, special place in my heart. How long have you been teaching?
I've been teaching, my first teaching job was 1995. I think I have 16 years at Latin and then 3 years at another school before that.
Wow. You're a professional, truly.
Yeah, I guess.
Much to teach. So how have you found this whole distance learning, e-learning stuff?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's quite a change. I mean, we're really lucky at Latin, though, that all the kids have devices and Wi-Fi. So that part of it was not a problem. But just like the big, a huge adjustment to not seeing your kids and not being to help them, not being able to tap them on the shoulder and say, "Hey, look, you know, you need to fix this." You know, that just was a huge, huge difference. So I don't know. I was actually really impressed with how well most of our kids did. We had a few that struggled, but for the most part, most of our kids went through it like rock stars. I was impressed.
That's great. As a science teacher, I'm sure you had special things to overcome. I mean, you couldn't do labs, right? No hands-on.
Absolutely. So like we had to come up with things that we thought that most kids would have at their house, like, you know, literally cut a flower out of paper. Did you see that thing? I'd never seen it in all my 51 years of life where you like cut out a paper flower, you fold the edges in and then just float it on top of water and it blooms. It's like this like really cool, really simple thing that I'm like, we should have been doing this when we were in fifth grade. I don't know why that just now surfaced in the world. But, you know, we were studying plants in fifth grade. And so I had the kids all do that and they'd never seen it either. And like, "Whoa, this is so cool." So like simple things like, "I know you have paper at your house. I know you have," you know, so we used some of those things. And then I did send home a solar powered car kit that the school sent to the kids. But we were also in the middle of a plant unit. And normally we grow all these plants in the lab at school. But I had kids take veggie scraps. Was this something that, did you see this during quarantine? Like everybody was regrowing their onions. Like it was a big thing on social media. And so I had the kids take old celery that they had in the fridge and resprout them. So a lot of kids had new vegetable gardens growing on their shelves.
Oh, very cool. I definitely, as someone who works in a school as well, I can say that necessity was the mother of invention. I mean, we got so creative with the things that we did with kids. And I learned so fast and adapted so fast and got very creative in ways, you know, that made me look lazy over the last few years. So,
yeah,
that's the stuff you're describing as well. So, very good. Now, where did you grow up? Are you a Chicago native?
I'm a Chicagoland native. I grew up in Waukegan. Went to Waukegan East High School. Go Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs. Wow. You're practically Wisconsin. That's pretty far north, right?
Practically Wisconsin. Yes. Yes. But really close to Lake Michigan. Basically, yeah. I think for every year, except for 3 years of my life, I've been within a mile of Lake Michigan. So
beautiful. Love it. So did you want to go, when you were in high school, did you want to go close to home? Was that part of your decision, or how did you end up at U of C?
I only applied to three schools, Northwestern, U of I, and U of C. And I, quite frankly, I was going to go to U of I. Ever since I went to band camp in eighth grade at U of I, it was like, that was my school. I was going to go there and be in the marching band. And, you know, you could get in there ahead of time. So I think, you know, even the summer before senior year, we'd, you know, I'd already gotten in there. And so I was like, done. But then my dad is like, you know, there's this University of Chicago. I'm like, what school is it? I'd never heard of it, right? I think maybe you mentioned that in another podcast. Like, so many people in Chicagoland had never heard of it, even though it was this world-renowned university. And then, you know, that same thing that I heard you talk about, there was that article about with Hannah Gray on the cover of the magazine, right? I think the Tribune maybe. And my dad read that article and he's like, you're going here. I'm like, I don't even know that school. And he's like, no, you're going here. And I'm like, okay. And so then I think I had decided I wasn't going to go there. And my dad went away to a conference for work. And he's like, did you get that application in on the phone? He calls me from like California or something. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to go to U of I and be in the marching band. And he's like, no. So it was like the night before it was due, I had to turn in the stupid U of C application. Oh, and that's where I ended up. So
did you have to write some crazy essay the night before it was due?
Yeah, I did that.
Do you remember what question you answered? Was it a weird one?
I don't remember what the questions were. I did something about like painting my room. I don't remember what the prompt would have been, but I seem to remember writing an essay about painting my room.
Wow. That's cool. I love that story. And yes, my dad dropped that same article on my bed or my desk or something and said, read this. And that was it. That was kind of game over for me. Although I did really want to go to Northwestern also. That was my, but I didn't get in. So whatever, Northwestern. Wasn't meant to be. Okay, so great. So you got to U of C, you got in, you ended up at the Broadview, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, Brad told a very interesting story about ending up there, that it was kind of a overflow dorm for kids who didn't sign up quick enough for the dorms. Was that your situation?
I don't even remember. That was the rumor. So I don't know if I was late, but I am in general a procrastinator. So it's probably true.
How was the dorm? What was your take on it?
Oh, I thought it was great. You know, it was very, I just loved how it felt like being in part of the city instead of being on the campus. You know, I think that has sort of set this lifelong tone for wanting to be in like a beautiful urban environment, which that absolutely was, with the beautiful brick building and the trees and the Museum of Science and Industry right down the block. And so it was kind of, idyllic that way. And then just, so many good friends in the dorm, right? And it was a blessing and a curse that all of the rooms, at least freshman year, were all singles. And so we all had our own bathrooms because it was an old hotel, I think. Yeah. And so we all had our own bathrooms and our own rooms and no roommates. So that was, it was a blessing to have your privacy. But I think, I don't know. There were some times when I did feel a little isolated. I don't know that having a roommate would help because sometimes roommates are nightmares. But I liked it. Loved it.
And what was your major? Let's back up to senior year. Did you have a vision for what you wanted to do with your life yet? Did you know?
I think I knew I wanted to be some kind of a scientist, probably a biologist. Yeah.
Okay. Med school bound or?
No, I was never on the med school track. More of the scientist, PhD, marine biologist, or maybe oceanographer track.
Oh, wow. And so you were a biology major?
Yep.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any favorite classes, favorite teachers?
Yeah, I really liked Monty Lloyd. He was sort of this older guy. He had the crazy longer gray hair, but he was just really like animated and so fun. And his class was not the least bit challenging, but I learned so much. His curriculum literally was showing us David Attenborough videos, but those, you know, those are amazing, right? And you can learn so much from that. So we really did. I loved that class because just of the sheer volume of biology that was in those movies and in what he would share with us. And it also had a field component, which UFC doesn't have a lot of field components to anything, but we took a couple field trips to like the Indiana Dunes, or maybe we went to a bog, I think, and like jumped on a bouncing bog. So, you know, those were really fun experiences too.
I went to the dunes with one of my class, with the science class. I wonder if maybe that, cool. I don't think I had Monty Lloyd, but I know I went to the dunes. It was really fun. And also, but I got so much out of it, like seeing the different stages of a dune and all that stuff. I still remember that. And
neat.
So, yeah, very cool. I had a class. Did you ever take cultural geography? It was an elective.
Oh, I did.
Take that?
What was the teacher's name?
Don't remember. I want somebody to comment and write what the teacher's, but that class, again, was not hard, right? It was like an easy, but it was one of the classes that really, really was so interesting and really made me love learning again. It was so good and has stuck with me through life. I still talk about it, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah, I like that class too.
So see, teachers, it doesn't have to be hard to be impactful, right?
Exactly.
Sometimes the opposite is true. Now, when you were in school, were you involved in extracurriculars? What did you do outside of the classroom?
So I had a work study job, so I would work, you know, about 10 hours a week usually. And I worked all the way through college. My first 2 years, I worked at the John Carrar Library, and the second two in a lab.
You worked at the what library?
The John Carrar Library.
Carrar.
It's Carrar.
The hardest word I've ever had to say. Carrar. I have cousins who are German, and they would send their kids over for a month every summer, and they'd come live with us, and we'd talk about German words that were hard to say and American words. And for them, squirrel, the word squirrel, is impossible for a native German speaker to say. And they had some word, I can't remember what it was. But the other one is John Carrar Library. I just mind boggling. So what did you do at the library? Were you at the front desk?
I worked in the, this is back before the internet. So anytime like an academic at some other institution wanted a magazine article that maybe they didn't have access to, they would... Yeah. But so what I was in the photo duplication department. So I would literally just go find these articles on the shelf, bring them back, and then somebody else would photo duplicate, you know, Xerox them. Sometimes I would Xerox them too. But then I was so good at that job that I got promoted to like being a library searcher. I think this was my fancy title, searcher. And so like anytime another person couldn't find the article, like maybe the magazine wasn't on the shelf, it was my job to like find out where it was. Was it at the bindery, or was it being repaired, or was it, you know, did we loan it to somebody else? It was like a little mystery I had to solve to find these things.
A library detective. I love it.
Right.
If the great apocalypse happens and worldwide internet access goes down, we know who to call to find out answers. It's you. And then you worked in a lab. Were you working, was that interesting? Were you experimenting on humans or working with monkeys or anything fun?
Yeah, I worked with beetles. I worked in the ecology and evolution department. So my professor was doing research on flower beetles, and they would, you know, on like if you select for the biggest flower beetles, how long does it take for the, you know, to shift for that to show up in generations, for like all the offspring to be bigger, that sort of thing. So I would just sex them. Girl beetles to the left, boy beetles to the right. And that's literally what I did for like 10 hours a week under a microscope. Girl, boy.
Do flower beetles, do they only live for a few weeks or something? Is that why?
Yeah.
study the generation.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
Are you, side conversation, are you currently having the cicada apocalypse in your neighborhood that we're having?
So I haven't really heard them. No, I've heard about, I'm jealous. I'm jealous because when I was in, I think it was senior year in college that this might've happened as well. And because I was working in the ecology and evolution department, we're all super nerdy and we had a cicada coming out party where we went and collected them all just after they emerged because they're like still soft. And here's where it gets gross. Like we cooked them all different ways and ate them.
Oh, God. Oh.
So,
wow.
You might want to consider that.
Maybe. I know. The neighbor's dog is feasting on them. Feasting. Yeah, they're everywhere. And I had no idea. I thought they were coming out of the trees, but they're actually coming out of the ground after 13 years of crawling up through the dirt. And then they shed their skin, and they're crawling up the tree, and then they get to the top, and that's when they make all the noise. And apparently they're mating. That's mating. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating, absolutely. But it's so gross when you walk down the street and you, there's a lot of dead ones on the ground, but they're walking, they're just, the bark is moving, the tree bark.
Yeah,
is moving,
so. Ew, yeah. Well, we don't have that here. I'm going to have to look into that is why I haven't heard them here. Yeah.
Feel free to come out and visit and come see them firsthand. We could cook some, we could make a meal.
Yeah, right.
S'mores over the campfire. Now, what about, did you do any other, so basically flower beetles was your lab work?
Yes. And also another beetle, dung beetles. I only took care of dung beetles for like maybe one quarter, but there was a grad student who was studying them and she went off somewhere else for a quarter. And so I took care of them. I fed them cow pies. Somebody else collected the cow pies from the Lincoln Park Zoo and they would bring them in a giant garbage bag. And it was my job to figure out when the dung beetles needed new ones. We'd feed them.
Oh, how cute. And would they roll them? They rolled them in the balls, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they were in little, like, you know, like the 5-gallon jars, like jugs from Home Depot, you know, that kind of thing is where they, what they were in. So I would, you know, go in there and I'd lift up the lid and they'd be sitting there on the top. And they're really cute. They have personalities. Like you could tell different ones apart.
I love it. Naming them. Just think if you had had a smartphone back then, you could have made the coolest memes.
Absolutely.
Little videos. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. A missed opportunity before your time. Now you picked this question, and I want to kind of go into this. Were you more of an introvert or an extrovert in college, in your opinion?
I think I was definitely more of an introvert. I was the quiet kid who I may have literally gotten through the entire University of Chicago without talking in class ever. That is quite possible. I believe that may have happened. So that is pretty crazy, right, at the UC to manage to squeak by without ever saying anything in class.
And you were never, I mean, some of those professors were, they didn't let that happen. You had,
yeah. I mean, nobody ever really called on me. I don't know. I don't know why. Weird.
You were slinking below the table.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So now are you still an introvert?
Yeah, I would say I definitely am, but I've definitely learned coping skills. And also one thing I've learned is that, like, now that I'm a teacher, I've learned that there are just ways you can deal with it, because half of your class is going to be introverts and they're not going to volunteer to say things. So there are just so many ways that you can get around that now that I feel like our professors in the 80s maybe just kind of let things happen organically. And when you let things happen organically in a classroom and just go with the Socratic method, like whoever wants to say something, the people who are extroverts are going to be talking, or the people who feel empowered for whatever reason, like, you know, white men, they're going to be the ones who are dominating the conversation. And so I don't know, I just always felt like, oh, you know, I'm not a good student, I'm not good at this, but really it's the teachers who weren't that good at it. They could have done so much better.
Definitely. I mean, I think I'm more of an extrovert. I do have some introverted tendencies, but I remember sitting in classes and even as an extrovert thinking that there were some that just people that just dominated. They just wouldn't shut up, you know, and they had to be heard and they wanted to look smart and all that. And it was frustrating because the teachers a lot of times didn't. And I get the whole Socratic method thing, but there's also an art to gently directing what's going on in your classroom and coaching. And sometimes that didn't happen for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And I had a chance at an alumni event. It was at, somebody's house, and I went, and John Boyer was there, and I actually went up to him, and I was feeling emboldened, and I told him straight up, I had so many terrible professors teaching, you know, and I just, you know, was a little angry about it, and I told him, and he acknowledged it, and he says, yes, you are absolutely correct, and we have done a lot of work to improve that, and that's, like, that probably happened when I was maybe 30, 31, and, that's sort of like before that I had been feeling a little bitter about my experience. And since then I've been able to sort of like heal from it and think, okay, they're improving. And John Boyer, you know, agrees with me that it sucked. So yeah. There was some kind of validation in that.
You were heard. That makes us all feel good when we're heard. Right. Yeah, definitely. My graduate school experience was much different than undergrad. Although I have to say as an English major, I did feel heard in my major because it was all about writing and expressing and all that. So equally throughout, you know, and no one was allowed to be silent and everyone. So maybe that was a major thing too, to some degree, but I don't know. Who knows? We'll never know. We will never know. Okay, great. So when you finished with U of C, did you go on to graduate school? What was your path?
So I knew I was going to go to grad school, just I wasn't quite ready right after I graduated. So I stayed on campus and I worked. I worked in labs. I worked in bio labs, different ones than I had worked in undergrad. But yeah, I met my husband in the first lab I worked in after I graduated.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The universe was working on you. And what did you guys do for fun then? Did you what? You know, where did you go out and bars or?
So, in college, I didn't really go out to bars. I didn't turn 21 until I was a senior, and I didn't. You know, back then it was pretty easy to get in, but I just never really did that. But I did go to some. I liked going to frat parties, like, you know, because I was in Broadview. I knew all the boys who started ATO, and so that always felt like a comfortable place to go when they had a party. So their parties were really fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed those.
Always. They were good guys. Did you have any adventurous experiences or anything where you went out of your comfort zone?
Yeah. I really loved going to the checkerboard lounge. I probably went somewhere between 10, 12 times with other people. And we'd get in the car if somebody had a car. But sometimes I think we just took a taxi. I honestly don't even remember how we got there. But I do remember at one point parking across the street. So somebody had a car, but I don't know who that was. But, you know, they were really welcoming to University of Chicago students. It was, you know, a couple neighborhoods away in a very Black neighborhood. And it's almost like they loved us as University of Chicago students, but they also, like, felt a little protective. So, like, you could see, like, the doorman standing outside. You'd be like, get in here. It's like, okay, thanks. It's like they, you know, wanted to protect us once we were inside or something. That's the impression I got. But it was just the music. Of course, fantastic, right? And the old style, you could drink there.
Yeah.
You know, from very young age. My brother is a musician now, and he was then, and he's younger than me. So he was probably, he says he was 16, but he was probably more like 18 or 19 when I took him to the checkerboard. And, you know, they served him. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, just the Chicago blues, you know, I love that. You know, it's so fundamental to our American music and rock and roll. And just, I love the whole vibe there. It's great.
Oh, and you were there, you were a musician, right? You said you were in the high school band.
Yeah, I played clarinet in the band.
Oh, perfect. So you must have just soaked it up when you're in the checkerboard.
Yeah, super fun.
Now, the checkerboard's gone, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
For many years. I only went two or three times, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Should have gone more, but yeah, I didn't know like when it passed, you know, when it shuttered up. Because I didn't live here anymore, but I thought it was closed, and that makes me sad. Where do you go now? Do you still love the blues, and do you go out and hear music?
I do still love the blues. I go hear blues occasionally, not very often, but my whole family has recently started performing and playing a lot more music. So we're all like, my daughter goes to School of Rock and she has her own rock band. And I started playing the electric bass like right around the same time that she picked up the guitar. So I've been playing electric bass and now upright bass. I'm in a rockabilly band at the Old Town School of Folk Music. And I've even started singing. I've sung at a few different shows, which is so like not anything I ever would have done like 2 years ago even. But I've sung a couple songs in front of crowds, which is kind of fun. And then probably my favorite musical gig now, though, is actually playing with the middle school rock band. I play the electric bass and I rock out with these 12-year-olds to, you know, the Black Crows or like, you know, Bon Jovi. It's awesome. Love it.
Oh my God,
and the 8 a.m. assembly at the middle school really gets your blood boiling when you play that stuff. It's really fun.
you're rocking out at 8 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Middle school kids. Are you the only teacher in the band?
Sometimes. So it's actually run. The club is run by another teacher. And occasionally he'll pick up the mic or play the guitar. But sometimes if there are kids, he'll yield to them. But thankfully, we haven't had any kid bass players yet. So I'm not out of a job yet.
Perfect. Oh my God, I love this. This is all going back to the influence of the checkerboard too.
You and probably, absolutely, yeah.
All right, so go ahead. Let's hear you sing for us.
We'll do that another time, okay?
I'm an introvert. You don't sound like an introvert to me.
That's funny.
I love this. What's the name of your rockabilly band, in case I want to come see?
So we don't really have a name. You know, we're just the Rockabilly Ensemble at the Old Town School. But we do 4 shows a year. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
All right. I'm writing this down, Rockabilly Ensemble. I'm going to be on the website. Or you can just email me or text me and let me know. I want to come see it.
Awesome. Sometimes it's at a brewery. Sometimes it's at the Old Town itself. It's fun.
Wait, you guys could come play at the next... when I have this dinner, this break bread dinner, I'm going to recruit you.
Okay. Wow. I'm not sure we're at that level, but it's a lot of fun. It's more.
No way. You're doing this. You're in. Okay, great. So there's a couple more questions I want to ask you before we get to, you know, what you're doing, more of what you're doing now and stuff. That you had picked from my list of wonderful questions. One of them is, what do you love about your current job? We really didn't talk about that yet. And tell me why you love being a teacher, especially a teacher.
Yeah, I am a fifth grade science teacher. And, you know, I'm trying, like, why did I put this question on there? I don't even really know. It's just that I feel so lucky to have my job because it is, you know, being with kids every day who are fifth graders. Fifth graders are such a great age because they're really into everything. If you put something hands-on in front of them, they are going to get so excited and they're going to just love doing it. And they have such interesting questions. It's just, I just love working with them. And I love the challenge of teaching. Teaching, as you know, is like super hard job. And the challenge of trying to figure out how to like create a class that's going to work and the creativity that goes into it. I think I really enjoy all of that. And like, you know, this whole transition to online learning that we had for the pandemic was a whole nother set of challenges and new constraints, you know, that leads to new creativity. And I don't know, I just, it's always challenging. It's always interesting. My colleagues are wonderful. Students are fun to work with. It's just, I can't imagine a better job.
Now, what do you think? I mean, we're living, and these kids are living through this incredibly dynamic, kind of scary time that a lot of change, a lot of upheaval. It's all coming at the end of the school year. So you can't really talk to your kids about it right now, but I'm sure the pandemic stuff was, I'm sure, a big conversation in science. But what do you want for your kids? Like, how do you, or I'm trying to find a way myself to help the students that I teach to understand what's going on and also to be active change agents. And it's difficult because I don't teach in a very diverse school. What are you doing to address all that? If you know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know that I've really thought about that question. See, I'm an introvert. And if you ask me questions that I haven't thought about, I have a really hard time with it. It's all coming out now.
I will say something. You said something earlier about amplifying kids' voices or amplifying your voice in the classroom and stuff.
Right.
And I love that idea.
Something that was kind of interesting with this e-learning was that, you know, we were not in the classroom. So we had to deal with all these different technologies and, you know, Google Meet has chat boxes. So somebody who's a little quieter and doesn't want to talk in the classroom, they use the chat box. And that was really neat because I saw some kids who didn't really want to talk in the classroom would spontaneously say something in the chat box. I was like, that's cool. And also the tools like Flipgrid, have you used Flipgrid? It's where kids can make videos of themselves and, you know, so I just kids were able to, you know, in the comfort of their own home, in their own time, make a video. And then like they're almost some of them are like different people when they make those videos than they are in the classroom just because they don't have that pressure of being on the spot. And so those are some really good things that came out of the pandemic. Just, you know, different ways for kids to express themselves. And those are things that we can definitely take back to the classroom regular once we're back in the walls of the school.
Yeah, different ways for kids to be heard, right? And tell their stories. Yeah. I saw that too. All our kids have Gmail addresses. And under certain rules and restrictions, they're allowed to email us and we can respond and all that, mostly through Google Classroom, but even directly. And I had so many kids emailing me every day, asking me about books, telling me about books they were reading. All kinds of stuff, and just telling me they saw me walking down the street. But these were not the kids that usually raise their hand in class. But all of these other kids were reaching out, and that, you know, it was really great. So there were some good things that came out of e-learning too. I want to get to another one of your questions here, and I don't know the answer to this, but I think I know just by talking to you. What outdoor activities do you love to do?
And
I'm going to guess that you have a great garden and you love to garden. Am I right?
You are right. Good guess. Yes. So I would not know that I have a great garden, but I post about it all the time because so other people think I have a great garden. Yeah. No, I love having outdoor space. We didn't have an outdoor space until I think I was in my 30s. We got a condo with a balcony. So I started container gardening and fell in love with that, with veggies and flowers. And then 7 years ago when we moved here, I still have like a really nice big deck, but then also like a courtyard in the back with some trees. And it just feels like a huge luxury to have all that space to grow stuff. And yeah. I just love it. It's really, so I grow a lot of tomatoes and peppers and eggplants and then flowers. I love the flowers and flower boxes, you know, just great. Make it look like this lush place. It's fun.
Yeah.
And that's one way I get to express creativity, right? Because I don't know, I guess most of my life I haven't really thought of myself as a creative person. I'm starting to realize more and more that I am. I just have different ways of expressing it. And one way is putting flowers together in a box, right?
Yeah.
And sure. And then with this pandemic, the Chicago Park District cut their budget. And so they weren't going to pay people to plant their flowers, but I guess they'd already purchased the flowers. So they had this massive sale and they were really good prices. So I went to the Garfield Park Conservatory and just picked up what they had left, which was a very different mix than I would have picked at the garden store. And so just working with a whole different set of plants was a whole different creative challenge. And it was really fun. And I think I really like what I got. So.
Oh, cool. Send me a picture. I'll put one up with the podcast.
Definitely.
Send me something that you've created. I love the Garfield Park Conservatory, by the way.
Yeah, love that. That's awesome.
One of my favorite places is the carnivorous plant exhibit. Have you ever gone to that? Love that area. And then, so what else are you doing now? What are you reading or watching, binge watching, listening to? Any bands that you want to share?
Oh my gosh. So I guess one of my favorite things is watching TV with my 17-year-old. We watched TV together all through her middle school years. And then like 9th, 10th grade, her friends became a lot more interesting to her. And so Friday nights, I was by myself. But now that, you know, we've been in this pandemic, I have my TV watching mate back again, which is really nice. So we've been watching, let's see, what did we watch? Devs recently. It's about Silicon Valley, maybe a little bit in the future, but it's very creepy and Stanley Kubrick-ish and has huge, like, I don't know, it's like really big problems and issues that I'm not smart enough to understand, but it was a very entertaining show. So Devs, like short for development, like it's the Devs section of this tech company in Silicon Valley, and like what they are up to is kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, cool. Is that on Netflix? What's that on?
Yeah, it's an original Netflix limited series.
All right, yeah. You're first, folks. Good, I have a new show to watch. Yeah. What about Musical.ly? What are you doing?
So Musical.ly, lately I've been really influenced by my daughter. She has her own rock band, and it's she listens to stuff that like happened when we were young, but I was not cool enough to listen to, like Sonic Youth. And so she's really into that and that noise band stuff. And so her band is kind of like that. And so I've been going back and listening to all this stuff that I wasn't cool enough to listen to back then. And I've been really enjoying it.
Wonderful. What a bonus having a 17-year-old that's into that. Does she listen to the Smiths? Does she like the Smiths?
She likes the Smiths. So yeah, she likes Morrissey's voice. Yeah.
Yeah, they were, I just love that. And they such a great guitar, like, you know, kind of mystical guitar band. Love that.
Totally. It's embarrassing that she can out 80s me. Like, there's a song on the radio, and like, she knows the name of it and the band before I do. I'm like, really? Come on. I lived through this.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. They do. The kids get cooler than us so fast. It's well, Beth, it has been so much fun talking to you. And I would, number one, you're welcome to come out and see the emergence of the cicadas anytime. Number two, I definitely want to see your garden and I want to see your band. I want to see you perform. And it's great to talk to a teacher. And I think teachers are really good at listening to all different kinds of people. And I think that is really important right now. So, I mean, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but that's it's a huge part of the job. And also knowing, listening, but also knowing when, like you said about UFC, maybe not doing this as much as they could have, guiding people, not to think a certain way, but guiding people to have better listening habits and, you know, discussion habits and things like that. So I know that you do that with your students, and I'm grateful for that. So it's good to have teachers like you around.
I'm really grateful to you for having this podcast because, you know, speaking of like sharing voices, how awesome is it that you are allowing our classmates to do that? And it's been so fun listening to them. And it's something that, you know, I'm going to want to pick your brain about how to do this, because I think doing it with students would be a really powerful thing for them to share their stories.
Yeah, for sure. Again, a guided podcast with students. I even have to rein myself in. It's been super fun. I've learned a lot, and I hope it's not boring. But whatever. I don't think it is. So
I don't think it is either.
But it is. It's really important, and it's, you know, it's just something that we've all got to be better at too. And also shutting out the noise around us to just focus on these things. So it's a noisy world for sure. It's been so fun. And I hope to see you next June. I hope to see you before that, frankly. We live in the same city. Right. And I can definitely reach out. We're going to have a drink. But next June, when we do have our reunion, I hope you'll be there.
Absolutely.
And also, you do the updates in the magazine, correct?
I do, yeah. That's been a new thing. That's been really fun to get emails from people. Oh, love it.
Yes. Yeah. So everyone, if you have something to say, please send it to Beth, right?
Yes, that'd be great.
Yes, thank you for promoting this, too. And I know it's in an upcoming magazine. So thank you. for the fifth time. Thank you for everything, Beth. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, Sue. Okay. This has been a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks.